Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's not that unfamiliar here in the United States for the big city in a state to be kind of blue. Am I quoting Miles Davis? And the rest of the state being beet red. California has a reputation as a blue state, but if you go across the Sierra Nevada mountains into the interior of California, for example, to your Bakersfield, to your Fresno, to your Modesto, you'll find yourself in deepest Oklahoma. And so it is that cities often find themselves fighting against the legislatures in their state capitals, which are filled with guys and gals, hi gals, from areas that are not metropolitan areas, like your rural areas. This comes to mind this week. It's Super Bowl week upcoming here in New Orleans. We've just had a little scare, a little terrorist thing. So local authorities have established a security zone, a layer of checkpoints aimed at enforcing new restrictions that will keep the huge crowds anticipated for Super Bowl week safe. This new ring of defenses, according to local newspaper, the New Orleans Advocate, won't keep out guns. You can't bring your cooler, but you can definitely bring your Glock, says a former state judge and former New Orleans police officer who's advised the French Quarter businesses on security issues. This is because a law was passed by the Republican-controlled legislature last year allowing anyone 18 or older without a criminal record to carry a concealed firearm without a permit, even in the security zone. But there are those who defend this situation. Dan Zelenka is one of them. He's president of the Louisiana Shooting Association. Quote, if you're just bebopping down the street and your AR is strapped on your back or across your chest, you're good to go. You're not breaking any laws. You have to do something. You have to menace somebody. If you're not waving it around, if it's just hanging on your chest, you're not doing anything. Bebop on, Dan. Hello, welcome to the show.
She's not a girl who misses much. Oh, yeah. She's well acquainted with the touch of the velvet hand, like a lizard on a window pane. The man in the crowd with the multicolored mirrors on his hobnail boots, lying with his eyes while his hands are busy working overtime. A soap impression of his wife, which he ate and donated to the National Trust.
Mother Superior jumped the gun. Mother Superior
go bebopping. From New Orleans, Louisiana, you got a gun on you? I don't. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Now let us try news of the United States Army Corps of Engineers. You may recall that on his trip, his goodwill trip to California last week, the convicted felon president, I call him the felident, announced that it was really easy to get water into Southern California to fight wildfires. You just open a spigot. It's just up there. You just open a spigot. Well, they opened the spigot this week. Water managers were relieved Thursday evening after the Army Corps of Engineers agreed to back off of a sudden decision earlier in the day to dump massive amounts of water from two local lakes. Water managers said they got about an hour's warning from the Army Corps' Sacramento office to expect the Tule and Kaweah rivers to be at channel capacity by Thursday night. That means the maximum amount of water a river can handle. These levels were last seen during floods 2 years ago, which destroyed dozens of homes and businesses and caused significant damage to infrastructure. Quote, we were able to get them to back off that, said the general manager of the local Tule River district of the Army Corps. He continued, they'll still be releasing water sometime tonight, but it will be a smaller amount, which will increase tomorrow, unquote. The general manager of the local irrigation district, or the local general managers of the irrigation district, were unsure how high releases would ultimately go and for how long. The Kaweah has about 27,000 acre feet. The other lake, about 5,000 acre feet that are above levels allowed by the Army Corps during the winter. But, you know, water managers will continue working with the Corps to limit the amount of water released from the lakes, said one of the managers. He says, we're still trying to wrap our minds around the numbers that made this happen. We haven't received much information from the Army Corps, just very vague answers. This, by the way, is from San Joaquin Water, a local nonprofit. The public affairs officer for the Sacramento Office of the Army Corps would only say that levels in both lakes were, quote, currently in the flood control space, unquote. He directed further questions to the Army Corps headquarters, which did not respond. Some people interviewed for the story speculated that the move was political on the part of the new administration, a kind of water flex, but they declined to elaborate. Let us not try to elaborate. And on the subject of water, Dateline Topeka, Kansas, from another nonprofit, the Kansas Reflector, aquifer levels in parts of western Kansas that rely on groundwater for everything from drinking to irrigation fell more than a foot last year. According to Kansas Geological Survey scientists, the survey earlier this month completed its annual campaign to measure the Ogallala Aquifer. That supplies the western one-third of the state with water. It is the largest underground store of fresh water in the United States, and it has been declining for decades because of overuse to irrigate crops in otherwise arid parts of the state. That's Kansas. Doing the same thing in California, babe. Cheap federal water brought to arid areas to grow thirsty crops like almonds. That was my warning tone of voice. According to preliminary data presented to the Kansas House Water Committee, aquifer levels in the groundwater management area covering southwest Kansas fell by 1.52 feet between last January and this month. A larger drop than the decline the year before. Northwest Kansas, struggling with dry conditions, saw the aquifer decline 1.34 feet, a far more significant drop than the one in the previous year or two. The figures are preliminary. Parts of western Kansas where the aquifer is especially deep still have decades of water left. Others are near dry already. The Ogallala Aquifer has been in decline since the mid-20th century. After World War II, a boom in groundwater irrigation transformed arid western Kansas into an agricultural powerhouse, but the aquifer refills far more slowly than farmers are draining it. I blame the aquifer. And now, ladies and gentlemen, ooh, can you feel it? It's a crypto winter. An Ethereum-based project promising to duplicate the Bitcoin-leveraged investment strategy used by MicroStrategy has announced that prior to even launching, $535,000 in Ethereum was lost when a misconfiguration in the project interface resulted in tokens being sent to the wrong address. The project appears to have determined that the tokens are irrecoverably lost because they announced that they had contributed that 165 Ethereum of their own to reimburse users for their costly mistake. The Financial Times news wrap reports memories of the president's meme coin, that is to say, President Felident Trump, which launched days ahead of his inauguration. Its price has been on a steady decline after its dramatic rise. His wife's coin, Dollar Melania, has posted an even more precipitous drop. Quote, "The mainstreaming of crypto and the benign attitude of regulators will expose the conventional financial system to risk spillovers," and he adds, "U.S. taxpayers will pay the bill." That's Cornell University professor Eswar Prasad writing in the Financial Times. And this warning, the Trump administration's embrace of cryptocurrency is helping fuel a speculative mania that could cause havoc when prices collapse. That's the warning from the hedge fund Elliott Management. That's a weird last name, but no, it's the $70 billion in assets firm took aim at the U.S. government's apparent enthusiasm for assets that have soared in price but have, quote, no substance, unquote, and also at politicians who are supportive of cryptocurrencies that could eventually become a rival to the U.S. dollar. That's according to an investor letter seen by the Financial Times. "The fund has never seen a market like this," wrote Elliott, referring to the speculative investor frenzy it believes is gripping financial markets. Well, there were tulips. It pointed to the artificial intelligence boom and high equity market valuations as signs of investors, quote, "acting like a crowd of sports bettors." Crypto is ground zero, he says, for the speculative surge across markets, not only because of the size it has grown to, but because of its, quote, "perceived proximity to the White House," unquote. The inevitable collapse of the crypto bubble, quote, "could wreak havoc in ways we cannot yet anticipate," it said. Elliott's criticism of the White House's stance on crypto comes despite the fact that the firm's founder, Paul Singer, is a longtime Republican donor who donated $56 million to conservative candidates in last year's election cycle. Singer, who's long warned of the dangers of crypto, has in the past been critical of the Felident's economic policies, but he did donate $5 million to the Make America Great campaign, Great Again Political Action Committee, to support the Felident. Cryptocurrency prices have rallied hard since Trump's election in November, after he promised he would make the U.S., quote, "the Bitcoin superpower of the world," unquote. Bitcoin surged from $70,000 to $100,000. After his inauguration, he signed an executive order to promote U.S. leadership in digital assets and tasked a working group with evaluating the creation of a national digital assets stockpile. That's a closet full of nothing. Elliott's letter also points to, quote, "the immense advantage," unquote, "the dollar enjoys as the world's reserve currency," that's an actual currency, "and questioned why the U.S. government would encourage the take-up of alternatives at a time when other countries are trying to wean themselves off the greenback. For any elected official to support marginalizing the dollar was profoundly dangerous," wrote the company, highlighting the hundreds of millions of dollars spent helping politicians who were sympathetic to crypto get elected. Trump's own businesses have extended their links with the cryptocurrency markets alongside his sons and longtime business partners. Trump backed a crypto platform called World Liberty Financial last year. And of course, earlier this month, he and First Lady both launched meme coins, a type of currency, according to the Financial Times, with no underlying business model or cash flow. Elliott, founded by Singer in 1977, is known as a fearsome activist investor, which takes on companies and even countries in heated boardroom or legal battles. It declined to comment. Ooh, that's the cold breath of the crypto winter. And now, news of the godly. Back to New Orleans, where Archbishop Gregory Amond fired the longtime CEO of the Second Harvest Food Bank of Greater New Orleans and three members of the nonprofit organization's board in a dispute that appears tied to the church's efforts to settle its long-running bankruptcy case caused by all those clergymen who diddled around, to use the technical term. The archdiocese gave no reason in a prepared statement for its decision to remove Natalie Jairo from her 13-year-old post at the helm of the organization. It provides food to 400,000 needy residents in 23 counties, we call them parishes, across the state. The statement also did not mention that Amond also removed three other members from the nonprofit board. Quote, the agency will be bringing in a new leader with refreshed vision to build on a strong foundation and to strengthen the spiritual dimension of Second Harvest as it continues its focus on feeding the poor and hungry, said the statement. In a scathing press release of his own, former chairman Bert Wilson said the terminations are the result of months of increasingly aggressive pressure that the church placed on Second Harvest to contribute as much as $16 million towards settling clergy sex abuse claims in its nearly five-year-old bankruptcy case. The deposed chairman of the nonprofit, quote, resolutely refused to reallocate donor funds that are solely intended to help alleviate hunger and food insecurity in South Louisiana. He said, our agreements with grant-giving organizations and other partners prohibit any expenditures that are non-secular or do not directly align with our sole mission of feeding the hungry. That the Archbishop has chosen to ignore these realities and jeopardize our ability to fulfill its mission and honor its contracts is both shocking and short-sighted. Unquote. In response to a request for comment, an outside public relations firm that represents the Archdiocese, well, that's always convenient, issued a statement thanking the board members for their service. Quote, however, recent developments have raised a concern about the level of communication between the committee and the corporate member and the spiritual dimension of the organization. As a result, it was determined to be in the best interest of all parties that certain directors be relieved of their responsibilities. The dispute comes nearly 5 years after the Archbishop filed for bankruptcy amid mounting claims of child sex abuse at the hands of clergy members and underscores the challenges of trying to settle the complex case. That from NOLA.com. Then we go to Detroit. A priest and self-proclaimed exorcist there is facing charges after allegedly attempting to use a 13-year-old girl's hair with which to floss his teeth. This has got to be news of the godly of the week. Father Carlos Martins from Detroit is a star of a popular podcast named The Exorcist Files, comparing his life to the movie The Exorcist. He's a member of the Catholic Church, works and lives in Detroit's West Side at the Companions of Cross Church. In November, he was visiting Illinois as a traveling priest. There, he's alleged to have approached a 13-year-old girl, asked her about her hair, and specifically if she ever used it to floss her teeth. Then it's alleged that he picked up her hair, placed it in his mouth, and made a flossing motion, said a sergeant with the police department. Police say minutes later he sat in the pew behind her and started growling at her. Quote, that was the allegation that was made by not only the young lady herself, but the individuals that were around her at that time, said the police officer. The priest turned himself in this week on a misdemeanor charge of battery for grabbing the teenager's hair and trying to floss with it. Father Martins is currently not able to work with the public until his case works through the courts. And what will he floss with now? And a watchdog group this week accused the Catholic Church in the Philippines of a culture of impunity, saying it had found scores of priests who had been accused of sexually abusing children, many remaining in active ministry, like they weren't punished or anything. The group Bishop Accountability said it identified 82 priests and brothers with links to the Philippines who'd been accused of abuse in recent decades. It had compiled the list from reputable media reports, court records, church documents, and other public sources. This is reported by the New York Times. The men were local priests or those from abroad who were accused of abuse in the Philippines, or Filipino clerics who served at home before facing accusations overseas. Not one priest has been convicted of sexual abuse in the Philippines. The country has the third highest number of Catholics in the world. It's the latest sign the Catholic Church's global abuse scandal is still ricocheting, this time in Asia. That's a region the Vatican is eyeing for future growth. Pope Francis has ordered clergy to report allegations of abuse and cover-up, saying every diocese must have a system that allows the public to submit reports easily. The head of Bishop Accountability said her list almost certainly didn't cover all abuse, because that often goes unreported. The group was established in Boston way back in 2003, has compiled similar lists of priests publicly accused of abuse in the United States, Argentina, Chile, and Ireland. So we're in good company. News of the godly. And now, it's a smart world.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Amazon, you've heard of them, has an advertising subsidiary. Did you know that? Sure you did. They've been sued for allegedly collecting personal and location data from third-party mobile apps without obtaining the informed consent of their users. And they respect their users so very much. The lawsuit. Now, normally I don't basically share news of lawsuits with you because, of course, they're one side of an argument. But this is an interesting side. The lawsuit was filed in federal court in San Francisco. It aspires to be a class action. But on behalf of one plaintiff, Felix Kolotinsky, the complaint alleges Amazon and Amazon Advertising, that's my favorite part of Amazon, have been surreptitiously tracking and selling California residents' sensitive movements and locations. I have sensitive movements, but the legal filing takes issue with Amazon Ads SDK. That is a software library that the e-commerce giant provides to third-party app makers that allows them to serve ads while allegedly collecting user data. That's the verb they use. Ads are served. They're not bombarding you, you are being served. Ad tech firms like Amazon, Google, Meta provide software development kits, SDKs, so that developers can monetize their apps without reinventing commonly used code patterns every time. The cost of this convenience, the SDK maker, in addition to the app developer, gains access to valuable data, a fact that's often buried in terms of service, You read those, don't you? Or not disclosed at all. Quote, the data that Amazon collects from unsuspecting consumers is incredibly sensitive, says the complaint. Amazon collects time-stamped geolocation data that reveals where a consumer works and lives and which locations they frequent. The collected location data revealed sensitive information about each consumer, such as their religious affiliation, sexual orientation, and medical conditions. This enormous volume of data enables Amazon and its advertising partners to build a comprehensive profile about each consumer, including their movements and whereabouts. Amazon, you want me to show you some of my movements? Here's one right here. Concerns about data gathering through SDKs implemented by third parties go back years, a testament to weak U.S. state and federal privacy laws, according to the Register, the British Tech Journal. Last year, though, the Federal Trade Commission took action against broker MobileWalla and analytics firm Gravy Analytics over similar data privacy concerns. In its discussion of the matter, the FTC echoed the claim made in the Amazon lawsuit that geolocation data shared to target advertisements, quote, can reveal visits to healthcare facilities, churches, labor unions, military installations, and other sensitive locations, unquote. No, they didn't mention brothels. More recently, the Attorney General of Texas accused insurance firm Allstate Corporation and its mobile analytics subsidiary, Arity, that's the name of it, Arity, of gathering similarly sensitive data without consent via the Arity SDK. Allstate insists its activities comply with the law. And they're following you home.
Itemize the things you covet as you squander through your life. Bigger cars, bigger houses, term insurance for your wife. Tuesday evenings with your harlot, and on Wednesdays it's your charlatan analyst. He's high up on your list. You've got air-conditioned sinuses and dark, disturbing doubt about religion. And you keep those cards and letters going out while your secretary's tempting you. Your morals are exempting you from guilt and shame. Heaven knows you're not to blame. You better take care of business, Mr. Businessman. What's your plan? Get down to business, Mr. Businessman, if you can. You better take care of business, Mr. Businessman. What's your plan? Get down to business, Mr. Businessman, if you can. Hey, yeah. Hey, 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 hey.
From the beautiful Oval Office, which is built without the help of any stupid DEI regulations, so it's a perfect oval, unlike some other Oval Offices built under previous criminal administrations. I'm your favorite president with the final edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Ketchup. Sticks to your stomach like it sticks to the wall. As I said in the opening, this is the last of these messages via Truth Social. All of my future messages to you will be from my official White House press conferences, speeches, helicopter landings, and all the other opportunities you've given me in your overwhelming mandate to reshape the grotesquely overgrown federal government to a more business-like shape, like, say, Trump Media, which, since it's no longer producing these messages, will be reshaped itself to a financial services company providing access to Trump-branded crypto products. Look for them soon before the dip. This week we began our fight against DEI, or as I call it, DIE, because it's dead. Everything has gotten worse since the worst president in history adopted these DEI rules. Trains run more slowly. Apples aren't as sweet. planes crash. DEI has infected this country like a great infection. But common sense tells me that common sense is the answer. It's also the question. That's how good it is. Defective people have their place, but it's not in our place. And that you can take to the bank, if it's the Trump bank, coming soon. That's all for now. We'll flood the zone again next week. So long.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Butter from Dairy, not DEI cows. So long. From the non-security zone of New Orleans, this is the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
No, not quite enough said. Researchers have identified higher concentrations of microplastics and their little brothers and sisters, nanoplastics, in the placentas of infants born prematurely compared to those born at term. This is according to a study presented at the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. Microplastics are, you know, too small to be seen with the naked eye. They're pervasive in the environment. Previous research has shown that exposure to them can be harmful to both humans and the environment. Well, I care more about humans. No, I care. The new study suggests these tiny plastic particles may accumulate in the placenta during pregnancy and could potentially play a role in preterm births, like the role of the angry uncle. In collaboration with investigators at the University of New Mexico, researchers analyzed 175 placentae, 100 from full-term births, 75 from preterm births, using highly sensitive mass spectrometry, my favorite kind of spectrometry. They detected significantly higher levels of microplastics and nanoplastics in the placentae of preterm infants. What does this mean? One of the study's key findings is that plastic accumulation was not simply a byproduct of a longer pregnancy. Instead, researchers observed that preterm placentae had greater concentrations of microplastics and nanoplastics despite the shorter period of gestation. This was surprising because it was counterintuitive to what you might expect if it was merely a byproduct of the length of time of the pregnancy, said the lead author. In other words, a preterm delivery not only accumulates more microplastics and nanoplastics in its placenta relative to term, but did so at an earlier time point in the pregnancy. This hints at the possibility that the accumulation of plastics could be contributing to the risk and occurrence of preterm birth. This study adds to the growing body of evidence ranging from heart disease to potentially stroke that demonstrates a real risk of exposure to plastics on human health. Oh, is that all? The microplastics can also cause functional irregularities in the brain. I say in the brain. But exactly how they exert neurotoxic effects remains unclear. A research collaboration headed up at the Chinese Research Academy of Environmental Sciences and Peking University has shed light on this conundrum in a series of cerebral imaging studies reported in Science Advances. The researchers tracked the progression of fluorescent microplastics through the brains of mice. They found that microplastics entering the bloodstream become engulfed by immune cells, which then obstruct blood vessels in the brain and cause neurobehavioral abnormalities. It's essential to develop methods for detecting microplastics within the bloodstream, says the principal investigator. We focused on the brain due to its critical importance. If microplastics induce lesions in this region, it could have a profound impact on the entire body. But wait, there's more. A new study found microplastics can block the flow of blood in the brains of mice. The study comes on the heels of other research showing for the first time microplastics can lodge in human brains. For the new study, scientists fed mice tiny bits of fluorescent polystyrene. That sounds so pretty, doesn't it? A form of plastic commonly used in packaging. They then used a specialized microscope to trace the flow of plastic, viewing mice brains through windows installed in the animal's skulls. I hope they didn't also send Venetian blood. Researchers could see that mouse immune cells had ingested some plastic bits full of polystyrene. These immune cells piled up in blood vessels, blocking the flow of blood, similar to a clot. Sounds like the other study in non-mice brain, doesn't it? A recent study conducted by the Five Gyres Institute and published in the journal PLOS-1 took a closer look at plastic pollution trends in the last 50 years or so, found that in 2005, around 16 trillion plastic particles floated in the oceans. Today, that number has increased to approximately 171 trillion pieces. But the amount of plastic particles entering the oceans is not the only concern, according to Oceanographic magazine. A new study conducted by scientists at Plymouth Marine Laboratory in the University of Exeter has now revealed that the particle type also affects the colonization, enrichment, and spread of both antimicrobial resistant and pathogenic, that would be disease-causing, bacteria. The study finds that marine plastic is a breeding ground for such bacteria. And after all that, just one word, microplastics. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
A city councilman in Cleveland, hello Cleveland, Joe Jones, apologized this week in the wake of an investigation that found he engaged in a sustained pattern of inappropriate and unprofessional behavior. It's the first time he's commented on accusations of mistreating staff and making inappropriate comments about an artist's appearance. The last few weeks have been very challenging for me personally and professionally, he said in a statement. Although unintended, I recognize my actions have made others feel uncomfortable, and I sincerely apologize. I've learned a lot about myself, and I feel a deep sense of remorse. The fact that these allegations have clouded my service to the community and my residents is heartbreaking. I will temporarily step back from committee deliberations as he focuses, he says, on professional development. His committee resignations were not voluntary. CNN political commentator Bakari Sellers apologized this week after deleting a tweet that placed blame on President Trump for the deadly midair crash over Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C., claiming he effed up by citing the president's federal hiring freeze as a potential reason for the accident. Sellers' initial post sparked backlash among Trump supporters, who called the former Democratic lawmaker despicable. As the Richland County, South Carolina Sheriff's Department last year mourned the loss of two canines killed while pursuing thieves, two of the department's own canine handlers were stealing from the department, said the sheriff, Leon Lott. Two canine specialists were arrested and charged with misconduct in office. Both men are facing up to 10 years in jail. Corey Mayo and Isaac Page were stealing canine equipment from the sheriff's department and selling the items via social media. I apologize to the community, Lott said during a Wednesday news conference, saying that Mayo and Page had tarnished the badge. You can get some silver polish for that. The BBC has apologized to staff members who felt unable to complain about the conduct of actor and comedian Russell Brand because of his status, after an internal review found that concerns about his behavior weren't being handled appropriately. The investigation by Peter Johnson, the BBC's director of editorial complaints, identified 8 complaints about Brand. They included allegations that he had sex on BBC premises. Talk about news of the world. And exposed himself in the studio. Only one of those complaints was formally made to management at the time, Johnson found. quote, "I'm grateful to those who have come forward to talk to me and my team, and I've apologized on behalf of the BBC to those most directly affected by what I have documented here," said Johnson in a report released this week. He continued, quote, "The culture of the time undoubtedly influenced what was acceptable and tolerated, but I have found that a number of individuals had concerns about Russell Brand's behavior, which they felt unable to raise then," unquote. The BBC launched its investigation after British media published claims by four women that they were sexually assaulted by Brand between 2006 and 2013. You know, back when it was okay, at the height of his fame, too. Brand had two weekly radio shows on the BBC and worked periodically on a number of short-term projects. He has more recently created podcasts and YouTube videos that have been criticized for spreading misinformation and conspiracy theories. According to the Associated Press, he's denied accusations of rape, assault, and emotional abuse. Previously said all his sexual relationships were, quote, "absolutely always consensual," unquote. Johnston, the BBC investigator, said he contacted Brand so he could provide his perspective on the investigation. Brand chose not to participate. Other priorities? Malik Obama, the older half-brother of former President Barack Obama, has issued an apology to those who lost money after he was supposedly pressed to launch a meme coin, Dollar Obama. The token's price crashed within a few hours in what appears to be the latest pump-and-dump scheme to sweep the crypto world. Still, and again, and still. Quote, "Hello, folks. Someone paid me a little bit of money to launch Dollar Obama and said it would be great promotion for my book and that I would make a lot of money," the Kenyan American businessman posted on X. "I didn't realize they were bad actors. I'm sorry to anyone who lost out," unquote. Not sorry to the Screen Actors Guild. Good Morning Britain host Ranveer Singh issued an apology this week after on the air after failing to mention Jewish victims of the Holocaust during her coverage of International Holocaust Remembrance Day. Quote, "In yesterday's news, when we reported on the memorial events at Auschwitz, we said 6 million people were killed in the Holocaust, but crucially failed to say they were Jewish. That was our mistake, which we apologize for," said the 47-year-old Singh. During a news segment on the ITV show Monday morning, she discussed the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz camp in Poland and reported on how King Charles was set to become the first British monarch to visit the site of the former Nazi death camp that day. Singh talked briefly about the history of the Holocaust, but when listing its victims, she failed to include Jews, whom the Nazis sought to eliminate through genocide during World War II. And Andy Cohen, you know him. He's on, is it Bravo still? With a TV show. And every New Year's Eve, he co-hosts sort of a drunk fest with serious journalist Anderson Cooper.
I'm not going to let you do this one. Sorry. It's so stupid. It's really so stupid.
Anyway, Andy Cohen his pal on the New Year's Eve shows, apologized this week for comments he made back in 2011 about Heidi Montag. Acknowledged that the incident was, quote, mean. It's from The Hollywood Reporter. Cohen mentioned during a recent episode of Andy Cohen Live on Sirius XM that he became aware of a controversy when the guy who married Montag in 2008 wrote on social media he would never be a guest on Watch What Happens Live because Cohen said he would rather scratch his eyes out than watch my wife, unquote. In the clip to which he was referring, Cohen called Montag trash when discussing her potentially joining Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Well, that's too classy for trash, isn't it? He said, I would sooner stab knives into my own eyes than see her on this network, and then apologized a few days later. Quote, I realized that I did apologize for this on Andy Cohen Live several years ago, he said on the podcast this week. I apologize, so what I will say also is that it was mean. That was 14 years ago, and what I really don't like about it is referring to her as trash. That is, I do not. That makes me, I don't like that at all, and I'm really sorry about that. So, I apologize again, I guess. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now taking center stage, Ralph.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better, hip hip hooray.
Google, is Anderson giggling again? He should. Google says it spotted Chinese, Russian, Iranian, and North Korean government agents using its Gemini AI for nefarious purposes. Tehran is by far the most frequent naughty user out of the four, according to the British tech journal The Register. The web giant has been tracking the use of Gemini by these nations, using not just simple things, presumably like IP addresses to spot them, but a combination of technical signals and behavioral patterns. And while these state-backed snoops have managed to use Gemini for translating and tailoring phishing lures, that's with a PH on the phishing, you don't spell lure with the, for specific victims, looking up for information about surveillance targets and writing some software scripts, Google admitted. The company admits or claims its guardrails at least stopped AI from generating malware. Overall, the American internet Goliath, Google, reckons Iran et al. Aren't doing anything too outrageous yet and are mainly asking the large language model for info and guidance like it was designed for. In other words, foreign governments are using Google AI for bad things, but it's not too bad. Yeah. Quote, while AI can be a useful tool for threat actors, it is not yet the game changer it's sometimes portrayed to be, Google said in a Threat Intelligence Group report this week. While we do see threat actors using generative AI to perform common tasks like troubleshooting, research, and content generation, we do not see indications of them developing novel capabilities. Well, maybe they're writing short stories. Iranian spies accounted for 75% of all observed Gemini use by the aforementioned quartet's agents. Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, some two decades ago, propelled by lies, the United States invaded Iraq. The lies had to do with so-called weapons of mass destruction that Iraq, in fact, did not have. But Iraq had fought Iran in the previous decade. Iraq had fought Iran for about 8 years to a standstill. They were basically the two most, if not powerful, at least aggressive nations in that area. And as I say, they fought to a standstill. The U.S. invaded Iraq, deposed its dictator, crushed its army, and as we were on our way out, guess who was on their way into Iraq? The newly superior Iranians. So they're entitled to whatever they can get out of Google. And finally,
looks like Musk-la.
Well, Tesla had a pretty dismal fourth quarter last year and a rough year overall financially. But Elon, supposedly the richest man in the world, says this is going to be a big year coming up. A record 2025, he says. Not a CD, a record. Buoyed by yet more promises of fully automotive, or sorry, autonomous robo-taxis. They're allegedly coming to Austin, Texas in June. Lucky Austin. And will be in many regions of the U.S. by the end of the year, Musk claimed. Again, predicting the future with some fogginess. Quote, some of these things I've said for quite a long time, and I know people have said, well, Elon, the boy who cried like a wolf, like several times, unquote, Musk on a conference call with financial analysts this week. Quote, again, but I'm telling you, there's a damn wolf this time, and you can drive it, unquote. So from a self-driving car to a wolf you can drive. I'm just trying to follow the... Musk made several bold claims about Tesla's full self-driving capabilities last year. This is not some far-off mythical situation, he claimed. It's literally 5-6 months away, unquote. That was 5-6 months ago. The reason Tesla is starting slowly, despite allegedly having a full autonomous thing, robo-taxis with no one in them, is because, of course, of the regulators. Quote, we just want to put our toe in the water, make sure everything is okay, then put a few more toes in the water, then put a foot in the water with safety of the general public, and those in the car is our top priority. Our constraints, I think, it's likely to be just regulatory, unquote. Maybe they just hate toes. Regulators aren't actually the only reason FSD may take longer to roll out, according to the British tech journal, The Register. The automakers' vehicles on the road now, most of them are still outfitted with Hardware 3, full self-driving computer, which Musk admitted on the conference call would likely have to be replaced for customers that purchased the new full self-driving package and are expecting to get access. Or toes. Sounds like Musk love. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week on the same radio station, same time, and on your audio device of choice at the time of your choosing. And you might want to be the boy who drove wolf while you're at it. Hope you'll join me then, because I hate to be unjoined. The email address for this program, a chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts and your playlist of the music heard here on, and all sorts of stuff to read and watch and savor, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the security zone. Don't forget your gun. Be doing some bebopping.